Hey guys, before we get started with the podcast, I want to give a quick shout out to one of our sponsors, a company that is very close to my heart, W&R Studios. They have recently launched a brand new website, cloudagentsuite.com. The Cloud Agent Suite includes the industry's most popular and award-winning product line, including Cloud CMA, Cloud Streams, Cloud MLX, and Cloud Attract. I'm sure the listeners of this podcast know better than anyone. Agents deserve better software. So check out cloudagentsuite.com and try all their products free for 30 days. If you're interested in becoming a sponsor of the Industry Relations Podcast, please drop me a line at gregrobertson@gmail.com. Thanks for listening, and now on with the show.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Industry Relations with Rob and Greg. I am one of your co-hosts, Rob Hahn. And with me, once again, is the infamous, the famous, the very nice Greg Robertson.
Hola, Rob.
Hola, Greg.
I got you again, man.
I know. You always do. I don't know why. Anyway, here we are again live, you know, face to face. And I think, boy, you know, you should seriously think about moving, you know, so that we could do this.
You know, like, to North Carolina?
Or, you know, South Carolina. One of the Carolinas.
Which one are you in?
South Carolina.
South Carolina, okay.
One of the flyover countries for you, you know, elite West Coast.
Flyover? Isn't that coastal?
Yeah, so we have now moved indoors. So we will babble.
Without the babbling brook behind us.
Correct.
Yeah.
Correct. I know we were still kind of coping from the disconnect stuff, but I know there was something that you wanted to discuss specifically. The floor is yours, Mr. Robertson.
Yeah, so I think, and you were talking about it at this event, and I think you also did a presentation on this at Clarity.
Yep.
And this is about the concept of, I want to put words in your mouth here, but of, what was the title you had here was a little bit more controversial, where
The
deal with the devil, the 1099, right?
That's right.
And for you, it seemed like that the catch-all for like a lot of the industry's woes were the fact that agents are not employees.
Correct.
That is causing a number of the, as I said, the woes in the industry.
Right.
And from a straight up business level, as far as making more money, but professionalism.
Yep.
And, you know, any sort of like moving forward for a business to actually execute their strategy.
Yep.
Those things could all be solved by the fact of agents becoming employees.
I don't know how else we solve them,
right?
I guess is the way to think about it.
But so go over, I mean, I think it's important to kind of go over, like, you were doing a lot of research on just traditional brokers and how they're set up and what they're making, and then also other brokerages and what the differences are, right?
Right.
I
think for this topic, quite honestly, like, the real expert is Sunny. Since she is the partner in charge of brokerage consulting, you know, she has a lot more personal experience as a recovering broker. And since she happens to be right here, I figured we should just invite her into this part of it. And then she could, you know, stop arguing and I have a lot of opinions
around this.
All right. So do you want to dive into this? She's walking away. All right. So I'll get started. Look, here's the deal, right? The fundamental issue, I think, is something along these lines. Okay. What are the problems that we have, okay, like in the industry? The one that comes up consistently all the time is professionalism. And we've been talking about raising the bar for 20 years, 30 years, right? You know, for pretty much as long as I've been in the industry, this has been an issue. Some of the other issues that we talk about are things like 660 MLSs. You know, we talk about realtor association, the value of the realtor brand. We talk about, you know, how complex things are. At Disconnect, you know, one of the young guy, Tim, got up. Remember, he said, you know, there are all these, you know, part-time incompetent agents, you know, who don't add value to a transaction.
Right.
They suck value out of the transaction. I guess our contention is that the root cause of those things is the fact that the industry, whatever, way back in the day, you know, 40s, 50s, whenever they did it, kind of made a deal with the devil. In the sense of saying, look, we don't want to pay taxes, right? We don't want to have the financial burden of having like salaried employees when the consumer only pays on success, right? And that's the important part.
Right.
We all, you know, the industry only gets paid on a successful close. So they said, we don't want that, right? We don't want that burden. So we're going to say these people are independent contractors. Even though legally speaking, there are a lot of issues where they're not, you know. So we've actually gone as an industry and lobbied for certain changes, right? I mean, I'll put it this way. Real estate agents are statutory non-employees, even though they have a lot of features of employees, right? Let's just use one example. If you're an independent contractor, you should be able to work for multiple brokerages. Do you know what I mean? Like, I'm an independent contractor as a consultant. I work for multiple clients.
No, but that's license law.
That's license law as well. So it's all kind of, you know, figured in. So yeah, our contention is that this is the root cause of most of the problems. So with that said, I'm going to turn it over to Sunny so she can explain a little bit more about why this is so horrible.
Well, going back to what we just talked about at Disconnect the last few days, is I did have an issue with when Tim Heil was talking about the newbie agents, because we all started somewhere. And being new in an industry is not a problem inherently. It's if you're new and you don't have anyone mentoring you or leading you. So I think that's a problem that people talk about in the fact that the people are new, but they don't actually address what the real issue is, which is the training and mentoring and having someone. Because we did. We all started without knowing anything. You passed your license exam. The licensing test doesn't teach you fuck all about selling real estate. So you have to have mentors. We have to have people that are bringing us up and training us. But the problem with that as a broker, which I was, the problem with that as a broker is that you can't mandate any of that training because they're independent contractors. And so as much as we want to have our new agents, as much as we want to have our seasoned agents come to training to kind of sharpen their skills and really know what's going on and learn about new forms and new negotiation things that we have to be thinking about, learn about new disclosures or just new sales practices or tools that they can use. We want to be able to have them train on all of these things, but they don't show up because they don't have to.
Yeah. Okay. But here's the first thing. Mm-hmm. Oh God. Okay. So
I feel like we're going to give Greg a stroke today.
Maybe. Because that's leadership, right? I have some newbie managers, mm-hmm. right, who have not really managed people before. Mm-hmm. And it's like, well, I told them to do this. They didn't do it. Mm-hmm. And that's their excuse.
Yeah.
And I'm telling you, well, no, the whole thing about being a leader, about being a manager, is that the best ones, they're doing it and they think it's their idea.
Yeah.
The employee thinks it's their idea. Yeah. And again, we can cut the line here of employee and independent mm-hmm. contractor. If you're a leader, right, you can make the language work anyway. Mm-hmm. We encourage you. All that kind of like up and downy, you know, language, I think you can walk those lines. You can play the, not the pronoun game, but the whatever game, yeah. independent contractor game kind of thing there. But to me, that's just like, well, they're not going to do this. That's because they haven't been properly motivated. They haven't been properly bought into your system. And that's why they're not doing it. It's not because they're an employee and they're not an employee, right? I think those things can happen. It's just people got to have a bit more leadership or have a bit more clear vision on what's going on here. I don't think that has to do anything with the tax form.
Well, the leadership thing though is like everybody wants to follow a different style. So my leadership style worked really well for some and not well for others. The ones who bought into it loved it and they would show up. But the thing is that they would let every other bit of life get in the way. It's like, oh, I woke up late, or oh, my, you know, I decided to go to the gym today, or oh, someone called and I decided to go show that house, which I mean, I'm not saying it's bad to go show a house.
That goes back to leadership again. And Rob and I argue about this before mm-hmm. where he says the broker has no responsibility for whether or not the agent is a good agent or not. That's not their responsibility.
I think it's
his broker. Brokers are just there to get them in the thing and they have nothing to do with the professionalism.
Well, that's,
right?
Hold on, that's wrong because
no, that's
legally,
exactly what we had this argument on a couple podcasts ago where
he said it's wrong.
I don't think that's what I said. What I said is, I didn't say it wasn't their responsibility.
Because it absolutely is
right.
by law.
I'm saying they have very little control, right? In other words, one of the problems with brokers—
they can hire him or not hire him. Well, that's the ultimate freaking thing of control. They have no— You have a, you know, somebody who's letting life interfere or who's not whatever. They're not part of the team anymore, right?
See, the thing is— I feel like the—
That's control.
If you're an independent brokerage, you have that flexibility. If you are part of a franchise, you don't always have that flexibility.
But that's— Hold on a second.
So,
I need to— Hold on a second. This is the issue, right? The assumption still is, to me, it's wrong terminology because it's not analyzing the financial relationship correctly. Any business, you, me, any business, has the right to say, you know what? I refuse to serve you. You know, you're like, you're not a type of customer that I want. Okay. But fact is, then we're foregoing that revenue, right? We're saying, you know what? I don't want your money. Go away. And I'm saying effectively, that's where we are with brokerage. the idea that brokers hire the agent, to me, right now, if you just analyze the numbers, it doesn't actually add up. Brokers aren't hiring the agents.
The agents are hiring the broker,
which is why everything's around things like agent value, things around agent service.
All right, but if the broker doesn't want that agent there, it's just because they don't have to be there, right?
They don't have to be there, okay. But again—
So they have the power of letting agents
they
go.
They do. But this is what I'm saying. Like, if you got to think about it, right? It's not letting the agent go. It's exactly like refusing to serve a customer because that agent is paying you, not the other way around.
Okay, that agent is paying you for not living up to the standards of your company.
Correct.
Okay, that's totally ridiculous.
Fine. But that's totally fine. You could say, you know what? I expect you to behave in these ways. These are my standards. And what came out of the disconnect discussion was there are some brokers who say, you know what? I don't need you in my company. And they said it's very, very painful to let
that's called leadership. That's called leadership.
And I'm totally comfortable if that's how I want to define it, right? All I'm saying is let's understand what we're talking about, right? What we're talking about is refusing to take money from a customer because you don't want that business. And you could say, you know what, that's leadership. Fine. Then the problem isn't a model, right? Then the failure is failure of leadership, I suppose. But either way, the notion that the broker has all this control, I just don't know if that's real. I think we've just been thinking about it the wrong way.
I would have loved to have fired half of my agents. Like, honestly, I would have loved to have fired 50% of them and tried to recruit new people in, but I couldn't afford to recruit them away from the offices that they were at, the good ones, because unless I was going to give them everything for free, like you don't have to pay a desk fee, you don't have to pay a split. The only thing you have to pay is a franchise fee. And if they're coming from independents, they don't have franchise fees. So trying to get those good ones over to your brokerage is really, really hard. You lose money on those ones. So you're still running a business. As a broker, you're still running a business and you have to look at it that way. I mean, you run a business. If you don't have any customers paying you, it doesn't matter if you're a great leader because you have no customers. So you have
no
revenue.
You know what? We need to take a step back here and actually sort of think about this from the ground level up. Okay. And here's what I mean by that. Like, just think about WR Studio, your company.
Okay.
Okay. The customers that you have.
Right.
The ones that actually pay you.
Right. Right.
How do you acquire them? How do you get them?
We make a good product.
You make a good product.
You make a great product. Don't sell yourself.
You make a wonderful product. But
it's sexy and it works and it's fantastic.
Somebody has to go and sell that product to that customer, right? The lead inquiries, if you will. Think of it that way, right? I mean, I know you have salespeople and whatnot, but like a lot of that is you. Like you, Greg Robertson, because I've seen you at the industry events. I've seen you meeting with the clients and negotiating deals. Like you're the one who brings the business into the door. With contemporary brokerage, if you think about it, the brokers are not the ones who have that relationship. It's the agents who have the relationship, right? The homeowner, the buyer, you know, they're coming to that agent. So the agent's bringing the business in. That disconnect is actually a big one. In other words, the whole independent contract, we can lead them this way. That works. It actually works if the broker is the lead source, okay? When the broker's not the lead source, then your leverage is almost non-existent.
I don't know. I mean, to me, it's like the reason why we have a great product, right? And there's, you know, a lot of products out there like, I don't think Salesforce has a sales team. There's products out there that it's just viral and they've made it happen, right? I don't think Google has a sales team for Gmail. I mean, the way the internet's set up is like, you know, it's just set up to kind of people to go there.
Yeah,
right?
But so we're, hold on. The knowledge breaking down, we got to think service business.
Okay,
now.
All right. But I guess for me, a product, from my look at it, if I go to a base level, if we want to make great product, we have to have talented people, right? Dan, because of who he is, what kind of leader he is able to attract great talent to get to him, to work with him, to make great product, right? If Dan wasn't Dan, we don't get that output, right? So again, it starts from the top, right? If I don't attract good talent in marketing and sales, you know, it's not just me. It's, you know, I might be the out there the most, but there's a lot of, you know, hardworking people behind me, just like any great, you know, manager, leader out there, right? So if I go back to like what you're saying is like, well, it's hard to get these agents. Man, yeah, business is hard. Absolutely, business is hard,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
But I'm not going to like just, you know, say it's different over here, whatever. I mean, you know, a great leader will attract great managers or great talent, right? So it's hard to do that. You got to be consistent, keep it going, and do all those kind of things. And I think in the end, those great managers, those great leaders are going to attract that talent because of that and, you know, some numerous things, right? It's harder, sure. You know, I don't know if it's harder than some other things.
And it's hard for agents to move too, because it's disruptive to their business. You know, they have to go through the rebranding. They have to communicate with all of their clients, which honestly, I think it's a great reason to reach out, but that's not about this. That's not what this podcast is about. It's hard. It's disruptive to their business. And unless you're going to physically go pack up their office, move it to the new one, you're going to go do all of the new signage. I mean, we could order everything, but then having to update all of their social profiles, everything else, it just takes time. And that takes time away from the agent's business too. So I had people who were like, I would love to come, but I'm so busy right now. Maybe when it slows down, but then they never slow down because they're busy.
Okay. So an agent can sign up with you as a broker, mm-hmm. right? They're your customer in a sense, but they turn out to be pretty shitty. You are, as a broker, you can still let them go.
And I did.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So
I sent in licenses just all the time.
Circle back. How does a 1099 solve this? No, how does not having a 1099 solve this?
So the way I kind of see it is, what is your definition of shitty? And you think about, what is that definition?
When I set standards up for my mm-hmm. business, those standards that I want them to live up to, right. they do not live up to them.
Okay. But they're producing like a mofo. So they're bringing 40 listings in through the door every month. They're closing, you know, whatever, 60 deals, you know, every month.
Listen, if that-
But
if
they're
that,
not doing it to your standards.
Absolutely. They're not-
You've got to walk away, right?
Maybe they're lying to the customers. That's not my part
no,
of
it. No, they're not lying. They're just unprofessional. They're just unprofessional.
Yeah,
but they don't return calls quickly. Yeah. They're sloppy with their paperwork.
That's going to bite me in the ass in the long run.
Right. Absolutely. So right. So then what you're saying is you got to walk away from
absolutely.
That.
Absolutely.
Right. And my point is,
I mean, everybody's had in their companies like this superstar developer, superstar salesperson, mm-hmm. but they are absolutely toxic to the company, mm-hmm. right? And there's nobody out there that's going to tell you, unless you're really, 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 really desperate, no, keep that person on. No,
sure.
You got to be a leader. You got to make that tough decision. Like, sure. For the betterment of the whole team, for the company, for the long-term viability of this.
Sure.
I don't care how much money this guy's bringing in, right? He's not, she's not doing it in a way that is conducive to the way we like to do business.
And my point is, there are brokers who walk away from that, but they're not one of them is going to say that was pain-free.
Of course not. And in a lot of cases, things are hard.
In a lot of cases, that could mean that broker is actually in danger of going out of business.
Okay, so you keep somebody on who's toxic, so you could be in a business that's toxic for longer? I mean, what's the end game here, man?
Like I said, man, I mean, just look at the numbers, right? Just look at the numbers. I'm just looking at it as a
I don't want to be involved in a business where there's, you know, one guy is controlling my business, no matter how they do business, that I got to just to keep the doors on because I become a slave to this individual who's just disgusting, who is not, you know, doesn't represent me mm-hmm. just because they're a good salesperson. Oh my God. No real business leader is going to choose that path.
Okay. I mean, if that's.
It happens every day in brokerages across the country, every single day, because they're running like they're running a 3% profit margin and they're like, holy shit, I can barely stay alive on a 3% profit margin. I might go down to 2 if I lose this person or this team, even though they suck. They're hard to work with. They don't listen. They don't abide by the standards. They bring down the culture. It's like, if you're watching all like your only revenue walk out the door.
But these problems are not going to go away. If this person was an employee, this would still be a problem.
If you have a toxic employee, you obviously have a toxic employee. You know, I mean, that right. is what it is. The issue, I think, is a little bit more than that, right? In other words, so you look at the actual mix of revenue in a brokerage. The top producers, it's not actually where the profits are. Just the way mm-hmm. that independent contractor right. works, right? Because you're independent. You can walk out the door tomorrow. You have all the leads. You control all the business. So therefore, you want a 95-5 split, and I don't really make money on you. Where I make money on are like the people who are doing 4 to 6 deals a year, but I have them on a 60-40. But those are exactly the folks that everyone complains about. And as a broker, you say they might be delivering service the way I want them to deliver them, but I don't generate enough revenue off of them, right? Even the profits, the margins are fat, but the actual raw dollars are not. So you're just caught between a rock and a hard place. With an employee type of situation, we're saying you can manage down the line. And those
okay, now
toxic
I'm,
top
I'm,
producers.
Now I'm getting you. Okay.
Right?
Right. Okay.
If you can't manage them, you can't get them, motivate them, you can't do those things, you do have to let them go, right? Just like any toxic employee, you might be a superstar programmer.
Right.
You know, and you just got to say, listen, it's just not working. You need to go. And that's a business decision. It's a tough business decision.
Yeah.
Right.
It could delay the release of a product.
It could
do all these things. Sure.
Or maybe it means that your next generation product is not as good. So it's that tough decision. I'm saying what our belief is that the whole 1099 model, the way that it's kind of propagated throughout the industry over time, And starting from Remax and then moving to KDub to moving to everything else is it really makes the brokers, I feel, puts them in a real tough bind. And that is one thing that came out of, you know, my little session at Disconnect. You know, even when we say like, look, it's a matter of leadership, you need to have better standards, et cetera. Those brokers will tell you, man, I have to suffer the pain of watching my top production walk out the door. And all of a sudden I went from number one in market share to number five because of this one or two agents.
No, I see that.
They do that. Now, here's the thing. The thing that's amazing to me is that there are brokers who do that, even though it hurts them financially. You know, at least in the short term, maybe the long term. There are people who do that. My thing is I can't blame a broker for not doing that. I find it real hard to blame a broker for saying, you know what though, I need to keep my doors open, right? This is responsible for this much volume and I can't do it, right? I find it hard to condemn them for that. So the solution to me is if we went to a different model, right, where it is W-2, then I think the broker has a lot more control. And that's bottom line what I'm after. Now, at the same time, it seems like there are ancillary effects to this, right? Like right now, and this is something I brought up, I have not yet heard anyone say, we have too few agents, right? I mean, every time this professionalism conversation comes up, nobody's like, well, you know, the problem is we need more realtors, right? And they're only 1.3 million. What we need are 3 million realtors because then we're going to have real professionals. I've never heard anyone say that. It's exactly the opposite. What they'll say is, we need to get rid of half the realtors that do no business.
Right.
I'm going, okay, well, problem is there's no cost, right, to the broker for carrying somebody who's doing two deals a year on the 1099 model, right? So why not carry them? And if they happen to be incompetent, if they happen to be inexperienced, I can't mandate mentorship. I can't mandate training. I can't mandate to use my technology. I can't mandate any of it. So I'm just going to sit back, wait for you to do the deal. If you come to and ask me for help, I will certainly help you and then hope you close the deal. And then I'm going to take 40%. I can't blame them for that either. And to think that that does not result in then this headcount-driven model, I think it's silly.
No, I mean, if you're talking about like from a high level that the 1099, removing that and going to a W-2 model, it'll have multiple effects out there.
Right.
Right. I get that. I mean, I can see it's, you know, what we've had so far, the way the model is set up has caused these problems. And in order to kind of do that, we want to do a course correction. And now that we have data from a company that is doing this, mm-hmm. we can actually maybe prove that this is going to be a better maybe. Anyway. Maybe. Who knows, maybe. Right?
Now, here's the thing.
I see that. I don't believe, going back to the last thing you were saying, is that, well, I can't mandate this. I can't mandate that. Again, if you're a leader and you've done your job right, you don't have to mandate anything. They're going to do it because they believe in you.
Right.
Whether you use the word mandate or whether you use it's like company policy or this is our employee handbook, they're going to do that if they believe in you. What's the old saying? How do you get a sailor out on a ship? You have to put in him a longing for the sea, right?
All right.
It's not about anything else but that. It's a higher thing
right.
than what, you know, what's my sleeping quarters on the ship, right?
Look, and that was one of the points that got made. And I'm saying, you know what? I actually am sort of agnostic about it. Meaning, you know, when brokers say, look, I do that in my company and it's tough. And I'm going to exercise leadership. I'm going to do those things. And on all I can say to that is, let me stand back in admiration, right?
Right.
And applaud you for doing that, which then brings the second issue up, right? So then if that's the case, every time we talk about professionalism in the industry, every time we talk about there are too many crappy realtors, every time we talk about raising the bar, then we really need to change the conversation to y'all aren't good leaders. And you know,
the argument I had before, the brokers are the one. I mean,
right?
You know, everybody complains about this, but does NAR hire realtors?
No.
Okay. Who is the person that brings the realtor into our space?
So I'm
who
just
is
saying.
It? Who is it? I want to out of your lips.
What do you mean?
Who hires? Who's
the broker?
The broker, right?
Okay.
The broker does.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay.
So it is. It is this like you made a mention of like. We talked to one of the guys at the thing. It says, oh, I'm Carol Williams' office. I got 70 agents. That's their worth, right? It's like their coin of the realm is like how many agents they have, right? And if that mentality is that way, if those brokers are just going to bring on any mouth breather that comes on, the broker's responsible for shitty agents.
Well, and the companies that have those policies in place, because independent brokers, I think, have more flexibility because they don't have anyone to answer to. But if you are, say, Keller Williams, Coldwell Banker, something like that, and I'm not shitting on any of these brands. I'm just saying some names. If you are compensating your brokers on recruiting numbers, then you're part of the problem.
Yeah,
if you're saying, okay, for every agent that you bring in this month, I'm going to give you X bonus. Or if you have to have this many asses in seats by the end of the year, or you're not going to get any bonus, you're not going to be eligible for a bonus. If it's the broker's problem, then they need to be compensated differently.
Yeah. I just wish I could go back in a previous podcast where we had the same argument where you were adamant that it was not the broker's responsibility.
Yeah. You know, like I said, I have a tough time condemning people for making a living. You know, that's bottom line what it is, you know, unless it's illegal, right? I mean, if you're a drug dealer, I'm okay condemning you. But if it's legal, you know, I have a tough time condemning people.
You're on a boat, right? And you're compensated for getting passengers on the boat. And this guy comes on with an axe. Right. And you put him on
like,
the boat.
I feel like you're now just going to break down very soon. No. Right?
And he gets on. Hey, there's $10. Right. Another guy gets on there. Okay. He's going to be a good rower. That guy's good. And you start on your way. And the guy with the axe starts like cutting a hole in the boat. Right. And the boat sinks.
Okay.
Whose responsibility is that? Who put him on the boat?
I'm not understanding what that has to do with brokerage.
Who you bring into your organization, who you bring on your boat matters. Right. And the person that's responsible for bringing on the boat is the broker. The person that's responsible for bringing them in the organization is the broker. Right. If we're going to argue about shitty agents, it's not NAR. It's not CAR. It's the broker that had brought them into that. And the broker that did not fire them when they realized that this just because they wanted a desk fee or whatever else. There's a lot of blame there to go to the brokers here.
I had some great agents that only did 6 deals a year. Super professional, awesome. Their clients loved them. And I loved the agents because they did such a good job. Always had huge customer satisfaction ratings. And yeah, they were like the mid-level producers. Some people would say, oh, well, they're just part-time. I didn't care if they were part-time because they were really good.
I'm not talking about them.
Yeah. They're really good. But then I had other ones that did, you know, 40 deals a year and they were great to their clients, but man, they were an energy suck on me because they always had questions. They always had the same questions. So, but if they've been there, you know, 20, 30 years and they're well before me, am I supposed to get rid of them because they're a time suck on me?
There's toxic employees, there's middle of the road employees. And then there's these kind of, I think any CEO that says themselves that there are not going to be some superstars there that they're going to have to manage differently than others is kidding themselves. We all do.
Yeah.
Right. I know the way she is. I've got to manage her different than a lot of other people. But, you know, I'm going to make that extra effort because they do 40 deals. I'm not talking about those. That's a common management problem. I'm just talking about the toxic ones or the ones that other agents are complaining about.
Yeah. But the thing that I feel like you're leaving out. So let's say you have a superstar programmer, right? Mm-hmm. Superstar developer. Mm-hmm. They're a little bit of a pain in the ass to manage.
Right.
But having them means that you're more profitable. Right. Like if you have a superstar developer, they're going to create product that's going to make you more money.
Right.
The company and as an owner.
Right. As long as like...
As long as you exercise leadership and, you know, right. And all of those things. Right.
And, you know, if they're superstar themselves, but they're causing productivity that lacks in 3 other guys, no, that's not...
Correct. Right. But, you know, as long as they're doing their thing and they're superstar, you're probably going to make more money from them. What happens if the more superstar they become, you lose money on them? Right? Because that's effectively what we have in brokerage.
That's a crazy business model.
And that's what we have.
Right.
So in a way, I'm saying in any company that I can think of, you put up with certain types of behavior as long as it's not toxic. Right?
Right.
You know where we see this a lot is like advertising agencies. You know, the creative types.
Right.
They're a real pain in the ass to manage.
Developers, you know.
Developers too. Yeah. But you know what though? When they're good... Man, that creative whatever campaign they did just brought in $10 million to the firm.
Right.
Right. That's why I'm willing to put up with it. The issue is the better, more of a producer an agent is, less money might make from them. That's a different type of deal, man. That's not sort of, let me just exercise leadership. You know, so that's one concrete way in which I feel like, you know.
Now, there's a business model issue there for sure.
That is a business model issue, right? Which then incentivizes me to go and seek out people who aren't as good. I'm going to make more money on them, which then automatically drives to a headcount model. Now, you could say, you know, you're failing leadership and, you know, it's your fault for bringing all these people in. I'm going, well, the problem is I need to make money, right? I didn't start a brokerage as a charitable enterprise. And it turns out if I want to make money, the best way to do it is to go put asses in seats and charge them, you know, a desk fee. If that's the way it is, like, who are you? Who is anybody else to condemn the way I run my business. That's kind of where things are now. You know, so I don't know. I mean, people are hating on a lot of brokerages, right? You know, you go and speak to independent brokers will, you know, shit on like, quote, the big box brokers.
Right.
The big box brokers will shit on the 100% guys. And they'll shit on whoever, you know, EXP or whoever's the latest kid on the block. I'm like, yeah, but y'all are just in business. You're trying to make money. You're trying to make a living. And we're end up having the same conversation over and over and over again. So I just look at it that way. So yeah, I'm saying this is the root of the problem.
Yeah.
And if we're going to change it, then either it requires one of two things, or rather, it requires what you said. Okay, so you know what? To the extent, imagine this. I'm agreeing with Greg Robertson.
No.
I'm agreeing with Greg Robertson. It is about leadership. I will grant you that. I'm saying on my panel, my little thing that I ran, even the brokers who were making those leadership decisions and sort of saying this is what's necessary, even they had to admit that the 1099-based headcount model we have makes it harder for them. It doesn't make it any easier for them. You know, and so that's really the takeaway for me.
Right.
You know, so I've changed my sort of mind and my philosophy to this. So the last day today, as you remember, you know, people are questioning. I'm like, look, I'm not arguing anymore for one model over another. I'm just relaying to you. When people listen to this podcast, I hope some of them would actually write in or communicate with us and tell us, is it easier or harder? That's all. And I think what most people say, it's hard. It's real hard. I still do it. I still exercise leadership. I still fire that top producer. But boy, is it hard.
Yeah.
And I think that's
a
problem.
It's a fair thing. I mean, one thing Dan and I say, we have, you know, consistent sayings to each other. One of them is, nothing's easy.
No.
It just like one thing happens, this guy leaves or this happens. And we just, one of us, right out of their lips, we could just look at each other. And one of us is going to say, nothing's easy. It's just everything is just goddamn hard. I want to get more into this model because you'd mentioned that one of the models that you looked at in existing businesses now was more of a law firm type of model,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
So can you explain that to me, like how that would work in a case like this? Or
I'm going to defer to the partner.
I'm going
to
defer to the guy who spent some time in a law firm.
Yeah. So the idea is fairly straightforward, right?
Which okay,
is
everybody's an employee, number one.
No,
right?
Not everyone's an employee. So everyone's an employee except for the rainmakers. So that's the way law firms work, right? The rainmakers.
They don't get a salary?
They don't get a salary.
Okay.
They get a share of the firm's profits. And then everybody else is an employee, right? So as a young lawyer, what you aspire to is one day I'm going to make partner, right? So in a way.
How do the middle guys make money then?
Oh, they get paid a salary.
So they might be billing for 90 hours.
Correct.
But they're not paid on 90 hours.
No.
Oh, hell no.
Man, that's, yeah, servitude. I like that.
You know, but that's the deal, right? If you don't like it, there's the door and try and get a job somewhere
else. So when you make partner, you're still expected to work a lot.
Correct.
You not make a salary, but just a straight up commission on the profits.
Right. A split of the profits.
A split of the profits.
Right. It's because you are a partner in the firm.
I guess then the leadership of the law firm has to decide, well, what if one year this partner put in, you know, $300,000 worth of business and the other guy brought in $100,000 worth of business?
Mm-hmm.
They still get an equal share of the profits?
That depends on the firm, but chances are no.
Right. So it's not that the top tier is treated differently then.
Yeah, because they're the firm, right? If you will, the partners are the firm and the associates just work for them. At least that's the way it works in law firms. But
right.
The associates aren't responsible for bringing the clients. Partners are.
The partners are, right.
Right. So, you know, when I worked at a law firm, I mean, like American Airlines was like a big, I don't even know if they're, yeah, they're still around. American Airlines was a big client of the firm, right? But the partner who was in charge of that had the relationship with American Airlines and brought in a bunch of business.
So the challenge you would have then, I think, with this would be, let's say you set up this model somewhere, right? They reach the level like, you're just going to say, you know what, your grandfather, we're all partners in this. We've got these other agents, right?
Right.
They're salaried. We're going to kind of can do this, right?
Right.
You might have a problem where because they can go make more money somewhere else, not everybody's on this model because if everybody's on the model, well, you know, I like my firm better than the other one. But,
right.
But they could say to themselves realistically, well, shit, if I'm just a top producer working for this guy up the street, I'm going to make way more money than I have the profits of this company, right? So it would be hard, I think, to kind of keep the top producers from just being a partner as a carrot to stay there just because there's other opportunities still out there. If everything was the same,
mm-hmm.
like every law firm is probably the same kind of setup.
So, I mean, I suppose the way you look at that is law firms lose partners.
right? I mean, partners jump ship all the time. I mean, it does happen. It doesn't happen that often.
Right. It doesn't happen all the time. You can work your ass off and then like, I'm out.
No, no. Like once you make partner, right? You know, sometimes partners will leave because they get a better deal or something else, right?
But it doesn't happen often.
It does not happen very often, right? You know, the ones you lose more often than not are the mid-level guys who are on salary, but they're offered a partnership somewhere else.
Right, right.
But, you know, the culture, I suppose, is a little different because I don't know. Like, no one's doing this in real estate. The culture part is important because, you know, one of the big things, like I said, when you're a lawyer, you graduate law school, the thing you keep in mind all the time is, I want to make partner. Because that's kind of when you know you've arrived. Do you know what I mean? That's when you go, I have succeeded as an attorney. Some people never make partner, right? Some people say, you know, I need to get off the track. And they'll go and do something else with their lives, right? Which is totally fine. But the guys in law firms, you know, who have made partner, you know, they have this like sense of pride and sort of professional whatever. I don't know that we have that in real estate.
No, yeah.
For all I know, that will never work. For all I know. But if I were going to build a model, like that's kind of what I was putting out there on the paper is it seems like this would work, right? Maybe the top producers, you know, they become the partner. And they're like, it's a social acceptance thing.
Yeah.
Now, having said that, some other firm comes along and offers them more, whatever it is. Maybe they switch. That's not any different than today, I suppose. Right? It's just everybody else who you haven't hit that pinnacle.
Right.
You're not an independent contractor. You're not telling your broker to go pound sand. You know, it makes it a lot easier for the broker to manage your ass.
Right, right.
Maybe that's all it is. Maybe the problem here is that the brokers, you know, who are talking about that, they're thinking about how do I manage these top producers? And maybe what we've been thinking about is how do you manage the mid-level guys?
Right.
That's what the issue is. And look, leadership is going to be necessary. You know, you have plenty of companies that have W-2 and screw it up because they're not good leaders.
Right.
I mean, that part is true.
Right.
I don't know that I'm like arguing for this model versus that model as much anymore. It's just, I will say this. So, you know, let's just kind of wrap it with it. It's something to consider. And everyone on the panel, all the brokers were like, it does make it harder for me. So I'm just going to go based on that. It makes it harder for me. Not impossible, harder. So I'm looking at going, maybe that's a shift that we all could think about.
Yeah. Like you got to put these things out there because there are definitely issues. And this seems to me that it could check a lot of boxes.
It could help.
Yeah.
You know, it could help. So I don't know. I mean, look, I think we're probably going to end up arguing about this, you know, time and again, and we'll see. And all I can say is this, no one's done this. Okay.
Right.
So it's not like I could stand before you, Greg, and say this works. I don't know.
I guess, you know? I mean, Redfin has in a sense, right?
In a sense.
Yeah.
Like Redfin's different. Redfin's not a broker. Redfin's an agent team. But that's a whole other issue that we should talk about at some point. I know we're kind of coming up on the end of our time here. You know, I don't know if I gave you enough of an argument back there, Greg.
No,
I feel bad about it.
No. I mean, I think I appreciate, like I said, we're on a high level. You're trying to like, okay, this is something that I see these are boxes we need to get checked off that are issues. And this seems to be one of the ways that we could check a lot of those boxes off, right? At the same time, I think there's a larger issue that's harder. It's harder to do.
Look, leadership is not easy, right? Otherwise,
it's not for the faint of heart.
Yeah. Otherwise, you know, we wouldn't have some of the problems we have as a society, you know, as well. So, all right. Well, with that, I think we're going to sign off here and think about going to dinner.
Yeah. All right, man.
Want to go eat?
Yeah.
Let's do that. Okay. Hey, thanks for listening to us, everybody.
All right. Take it easy. Thanks.
Right, bye now.
Bye, guys.